Ladies and gentlemen, it's 4 o'clock. We've got a lot on the agenda, so I think we'll go ahead and get started on time so we can get through the presentations that we've got set before our regular council meeting. So I'd like to welcome everybody to the April 17th City Council Study Session. All of our council members are present. The first item on our agenda for this meeting is to review the items on the agenda for tonight's meeting. So if you could please take a look at that. I know we just talked about it Thursday, but let's make sure everyone is still on the same page. First few items are liquor license applications and approving minutes and whatnot. Then bingo application and various purchase contracts. Item six is taking action on several resolutions. There is a lot on this agenda. It's 15 pages. So there is a lot that I don't mean to gloss over. There's a lot of things that we've talked about, some pretty significant things on here, but I think we've all discussed them, and so far we're okay with leaving them on the consent. Item seven is the ArtSpace project. Item eight is introducing ordinances for public hearings. Mr. Whitaker, are you comfortable with 8C? I know we talked about at one point keeping it off, but I know you weren't opposed to the ordinance being changed, right?
I'm fine, yeah.
Yeah, so I think there was still the question about spending money on a study and equipment. So,
Mayor, we're going to address that in your first presentation today.
Okay, great. All right. We do have off of the consent zoning case on the agenda item number 11A. And that's being introduced and setting May 8th as the public hearing. Council, any questions or anything else you'd like off the consent agenda? Everybody good with that? Okay. If that's the case, then the next item for this meeting is to hear a presentation and provide direction on department budgets for the Economic Development, Transit, and Transportation departments. Mr. Brady, how do you... Would
we'll go in order that... So transportation, let's hustle up here.
Transportation, okay.
Then we'll do economic development and transit.
Okay.
Mayor, members of the council, good evening. I'm RJ Zeter, Transportation Department Director. To my left is Gordon Hawes, who is our Deputy Director for Field Operations. And to my right, your left, Eric Guderian, who's the Deputy Director for Traffic Engineering. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss the proposed 17-18 budget for transportation. I don't know if you can see our presentation. Okay. There we go. Real quick, in the desired outcomes for the department in simple terms are to maintain an efficient, aesthetically pleasing, and safe transportation network. Services provided, I won't read these to you, but you can see both within the area of field operations as well as traffic engineering, the work that we do that goes with maintaining the public right-of-way, specifically all of the transportation assets that we have. One of the major performance measures that is near and dear to us in transportation is what we call our Pavement Condition Index, or PCI. As you can see, going back to 2006, there's some fluctuations year to year, but overall, our goal is to maintain our pavement infrastructure in what would be considered a good status, and that is above 70 out of 100 in PCI. From an overall standpoint, the way we do this is Gordon's staff go out and assess our infrastructure on a regular basis and develop our maintenance plans. And we spend about $16 million, round numbers, between our various maintenance operations, as well as working with the engineering department on overlaying streets, you know, that have aged further. Another important performance measure is response. As you can see in this chart, our goal is to respond within 24 hours of any citizen-reported potholes. Certainly, if there is an emergency situation that's presented, we'll be able to respond 24/7. Average speed of travel, it's relatively consistent. The fluctuations you'll see by quarter in this particular chart are really seasonal in terms of snowbirds being in town, people visiting to watch ball games and that sort of thing. The numbers themselves may seem a little low intuitively, but that includes stops. So when you look at the average speed of travel, it includes time being stopped at any intersection in Mesa. but we are maintaining our target of more than 25 miles an hour. Just a picture of one of our slurry crews in action, doing what they do every day. Accomplishments within field operations, just to give you a bit of perspective. We have about 3,600 lane miles of public street in Mesa. If you drop down one box, you'll see that our goal is to perform some sort of maintenance activity, in this case, on just under a third of the streets in Mesa. Again, this could be crack sealing, slurry seal, anything up to a mill and overlay. But it is our goal to be aggressive and stay on top of the infrastructure that we have. You may not realize because it's linear, but we do maintain over 250 acres of landscaped medians and basins. Every year we continue to add streets, so not only are we maintaining the new infrastructure that we have, but our infrastructure is growing. And then streetlights we'll talk about a little bit more as we go further into the presentation. This is a picture of our Transportation Management Center. For those of you who haven't been there, we're welcome to show off. We're pretty proud of what our staff have done in maintaining our intelligent transportation system. So you're all welcome at any time you'd like to see what we do there. Accomplishments within traffic engineering. We've recently updated our traffic barricade manual. The staff have worked very hard to coordinate a fairly complex signal design system along the light rail corridor. Things that you don't see but help maintain the functionality of our Transportation Management Center, as well as supporting bike and pedestrian events throughout the year in Mesa. And just a little tidbit that we have over 450 signalized intersections in Mesa, although our staff were quite proud this year that we actually removed one signal. So not just adding, although we are adding quicker than we are taking away, but we were happy to be able to do that in one case. Capital improvement program, we work with the engineering departments and other departments that are partnering on projects. As you would imagine, many times there's utility work that goes along with our projects and not just the road itself. But completed in this past fiscal year, Southern Avenue Streetscape Phase 2, several shared use paths, traffic signal work, reconstruction projects that are ongoing, and also the ability for our Transportation Management Center to tie in to when there are crashes and there are crash reports that are received, that if we have the ability and the need to adjust signal timing to help deal with crash situations, we're able to do that. Under construction and will be completed yet this year is the stadium connector path, connecting both Hohokam Stadium with Sloan Park. We are also continuing our work on several railroad quiet zones in Mesa. On the table right now, Union Pacific is installing quad gates at the Dobson crossing of the UPRR. There was a little bit of a delay, but we are continually seeking updates from UPRR. In addition, we will have a proposal by the end of the month to install medians on both Broadway and Extension crossings of the UPRR. Our goal is to get this work done, and following that, we'll issue a notice to proceed in June, and once the infrastructure is in place, we'll be able to issue what's called a notice of establishment to the railroad, notifying them of our intent to create these quiet zones. And I think that'll be a great addition for the folks that are impacted by the railroads. The two largest sources of revenue for transportation come in the form of a 0.3 cent sales tax that's called the local street sales tax. The sales tax is voter authorized and is specifically designated towards street maintenance and construction, and is restricted to that use, as are highway user revenue funds that come in the form of vehicle license fees and fuel taxes that come down from the state. What you'll see is an overall revenue of about $81 million that comes in. However, good chunks of this money are doing transportation-related things, but outside of the operations budget we'll talk about in a moment. About $23.5 million is going to support capital projects throughout the city. There is existing highway user revenue debt that is about $12.5 million per year. And then transportation, with its revenue sources, pays to support other departments that are providing support to our department, purchasing, legal, that sort of thing. And then that leaves $38 million, which we'll carry into the next slide, which will get to the total budget. Total budget proposed for fiscal year 17-18 is just over $43 million. Again, you'll see a number of revenue sources much smaller than HERF or the local street sales tax. The largest outside of this category is this transportation share of the environmental compliance fee, which is added to utility bills to customers in this city. This is just a graphic depiction of those revenue sources. Again, you'll see that the local street sales tax is the bulk of the revenue that supports the transportation operations, HERF secondary to that, and then the other revenue sources that are described. Overall, with our $43 million budget, you'll see, probably not surprisingly, that the bulk of the funding goes into the field operations area that Gordon leads. And that pays not only for staff, but pays for materials as well as a number of contracts that we have where we use outside forces to maintain our infrastructure. The balance, about $6.7 million, goes to support the efforts of our traffic engineering division. Again, just showing a graphic of where the bulk of the money is actually going into the field, and this is actually going into maintenance of our infrastructure. Okay. Thought we were going to pull that one. This is just a breakdown of.
No,
yeah,
we
did. Sorry about that. Yeah. Again, this is very busy, so I won't go through every line. Certainly, you're welcome to read that. But you can see that the biggest chunk of the money from our operations budget is going into seal coats, which again goes back to maintaining our pavement quality index. Similarly, traffic engineering, you can see the breakdown there. The bulk of that ITS is intelligent transportation systems, and that is maintaining our 457 traffic signals as well as the background infrastructure to support them. Budget adjustments, EVIT lights. This is a proposal to extend power and add light to 8 existing trees to EVIT's main entrance on Main Street. You may be aware of a similar project that we did where we partnered with the Hilton Hotel off of Alma School Road near the US 60, where we had a request to help define the entrance to the hotel. Similarly, former Vice Mayor Kavanaugh had a request from the East Valley Institute of Technology. The reason the cost is what it is, we'd actually have to extend power across a good portion of EVIT's property to get the power to put lights around those trees.
Now, RJ, what responsibilities would EVIT have after we've installed this?
Thank you, Mr. Brady. The city would pay for the construction and the installation of the lights. EVIT would be responsible for the ongoing maintenance and repair of the system itself once we're done.
Yeah, so it's a large number of councils, so we kind of held off until we got into the budget discussion to determine whether or not we want to pursue this or not. Certainly EVIT would like us to do this. I think the lights would be on the palm trees that are there in the entranceway.
That's
is that
correct.
Correct? So it'd be pretty dramatic, because that's what I'm trying to say, because they're pretty large.
They are large trees.
Large trees. And so, but the biggest challenge for us is just literally getting power to this location. So we put it out there because it had been a request by the previous vice mayor, but we had not made a final decision because we wanted to wait and see the impact it would have in the budget. I think the only concern, certainly this would be well received. I think it would light up the entrance there. I think we're kind of feeling like we're kind of also kind of getting into this mode of, yeah, well, not just, where do we kind of draw the line? So listen, it's a great project. It's a public institution. I think we're starting to feel kind of some momentum here. So we may need some policy direction from council, or maybe we could bring back some before we continue to make these commitments going forward. So it's just, we wanted to put it out there though, because I think Councilman Winkle's been aware of this request for some time. So it's there. We certainly could. I'm not worried about concerning absorbing it in this year's budget. It's all those ones that are still pending that might be coming our way. And so we just need to kind of think about strategically how to do this. Now, granted, I would say EVIT was a great partner in many areas of our operations, but certainly they were good sports during the light rail construction. So maybe there's something to consider there. So anyway, Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Rennie. Next item is streetlight master plan. What you're not seeing is, I apologize, there was a revised slide. We've kind of tried to step back since the last conversation that we had and try to tighten up this number a bit. So what we're proposing in the 17-18 budget is actually $150,000 for the streetlight master plan. Again, the goal of the plan is to evaluate options for possible conversion of existing high-pressure sodium fixtures to light-emitting diode fixtures, to include performing field measurements of existing lighting levels, performing field testing in two pilot areas to evaluate lighting levels and color, and researching new technologies that can be incorporated into the city streetlight network. So we're comfortable that if the council supports this, that we can move forward with the goal of bringing back some proposals for council to consider in a little over a year, probably the fall of calendar year 2018. The next item is...
Hold on, RJ, just quickly, sorry. Just so for the mayor's benefit, yeah. Well, Councilor Whitaker, this is a modified version of what was discussed on that previous item in the on the council agenda. We've scoped it down a little bit, but in order for us to, if we're going to have the pilot programs, we want to be able to also understand the different types of lighting levels that are maybe appropriate for different parts of the community. And so this is our proposal, is to go outside the city to have a consulting group do that analysis for us, so that as we do the pilot programs, as we look at different parts of the city, who, you know, some parts of the city want dark sky ordinances. Other parts of our community can't get enough light in their neighborhoods. And so, but having that information and really learning this new technology about how we can adjust the light levels with the new LED lights, it would be helpful for us. And that's what's being proposed in this item here.
And I apologize, I didn't sit through the presentation that the committee members did, so I'm less informed. But my recollection of the report was that there was about $200,000 for the purchase of the equipment, and then about another $200,000 for the study. And to me, I think the point that Councilmember Whitaker was making is that I think we'd all love it if it's cost effective, if we can afford to put in adjustable LED lights. Well, of course, we'd like that option if it's affordable, and it'd be nice to, as the situation requires or the sensitivities of the neighborhood require, to be able to ratchet it up or down. If there's a 911 call in a neighborhood and you want to send a remote signal to ratchet up the lights in that area to help public safety, I mean, that to me, that seems like a good idea, depending on how much it costs. So the question is, do we need a consultant to do the math for us and say, I mean, that's going to be dictated by the cost rather than, I think, someone more experienced in this area coming in and answering questions for us that don't seem fairly obvious. Is that a fair way to characterize some of your concerns, Mr. Whitaker? Or maybe that's a whole other set of worms or something.
I think what I'm just trying to understand is what's the deliverable of bringing in an outside expert? And if we have other municipalities that are larger than our city, would it make more sense to just go and network with other municipalities and say, what issues did you have and solve those problems through networking with other cities rather than reinventing this from scratch? That's the part that I still, you know, the deliverable being, you know, performing field measurements of existing lighting levels, I question the relevancy of existing lighting levels. Would it make more sense to go out to the community and say, what lighting levels do you prefer, rather than measuring the existing lighting levels, to the point that some communities may want a dark sky ordinance or some communities may want extremely bright lights? Wouldn't that be found in actually querying the members of the community rather than going out and measuring the existing lighting levels today as they stand with HPS lights? I don't know if that makes sense, but that's my overall concern with the.
Yeah, I think it's all these questions are coming from the place of, yes, we want LED lights, mm-hmm. and we're just trying to figure out how to best. We want to answer the same questions that you have, and yes. We're just kind of sharing your.
So, Mayor, I think in our council committee SAT,
yes.
This is where this item originated. with the request, working with some of the neighborhoods in the area who were interested in looking at different lighting levels. But we are restricted by the code as far as the, not volume of lighting, but the type of lighting that we, or the, what's the name?
The lighting levels.
The lighting levels that are required for us to have, and that becomes a liability issue if we go below that. So part of the request from the committee was to go look at alternatives, and one of the thoughts was, let's create a pilot program, which is on the agenda for tonight, to modify the code to allow us to do pilot programs. So then, RJ, talk about how this, so there's not equipment in this, Mayor. This is just
okay.
The idea of taking new technology and figuring out how to make it a work it, the application within the city. And I don't think it's a simple matter of preference. I think there's some other measurements that are important for us to meet, not only what the residents meet, but there still has to be some level of safety. And we're concerned about traffic. I mean, I've been in neighborhoods and some very small communities that are just south of here that have no lights. I'll tell you, it's pretty difficult driving at night, trying to find addresses and not seeing cars parked on sides of streets and kids running out between cars. So we kind of have to figure where is it we want to land that's both preferential maybe for our community, but it also, at the end of the day, it complies with some kind of safety standard. So, RJ, maybe just elaborate a little bit more. I think the council has some of the detail that's not showing up on this screen, but it's loaded up on the Legistar that gives the background here. But could you explain it a little bit, please?
Certainly, Mr. Brady, Mayor, members of the council. The idea of performing measurements of the existing lighting levels is just to get a baseline, you know, of what is out there. You know, we've had, you know, as you know better than I, since I'm new here, you know, our infrastructure has been installed over many years, and you could have different pole spacing and different pole heights, you know, in different areas that could affect, you know, lighting levels. So we just simply wanted to map, you know, the existing inventory and see what we have as you know, kind of as a base. The field testing, Mayor, back to your question, the proposal is now $150,000, and the end product of that is a proposed master plan. You know, the master plan, the intent is to address technology, to address lighting levels, and if they vary geographically, you know, across the city. It's also to look at the economics of the lighting. In the SAT committee, we talked about the bulk of the city being served by SRP, and that we hope to provide some data to SRP to support perhaps a revision in their current rate structure that would help with the rate of the return on investment. The previous work that Gordon and his staff did when this was presented to council last fall showed a rate of or return on investment, of about 11 years. And you're looking at infrastructure that will last about 20, meaning the individual LED fixtures themselves. So certainly if we could find a way to increase or shorten the return on investment, that might help the council feel more comfortable moving into a fairly large investment. If we were to do it all in one shot, we were, you know, looking at something over $14 million, which obviously is a large outlay. So is it something that's done over time? You know, what other mechanisms can we explore? And then there's always technology. We try to keep up, you know, but, you know, reading the articles that come out on the internet, I think it'll only get you so far. So we're looking for a little bit of expertise that can help us as we're choosing the investment to make, making sure that investment is going to serve us for a number of years, you know, given the size of it. So it's going to be a complex little project. We're also proposing to partner with Mr. McCray and the Energy Resources staff within the City of Mesa Electric Service Area. That's one of the two pilot areas, in addition to the Desert Uplands area. We would actually do measurements. We would have to go out and buy some fixtures, but we can absorb that through our existing operating budget so that we can have not only fixtures that we can measure the energy consumption, but there's that side that's more qualitative, which is the color light temperature that we've talked about. And there's different thoughts. You know, the HPS lights that your people are used to are more of a yellow. The newer LED technology is more of a white light. Some folks think that's actually more light, even though it may be the same number of lumens, but because of how the light looks and how people perceive it. you know, there's quite a bit of work to be done here.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Loon has a comment, but that satisfies my curiosity about this. To spend $150,000 to study what might be up to a $14 million investment, to me, makes sense. And in terms of timing, how to do that, how aggressive are we? I agree, that's going to require some study. Mr. Luna.
Just real quick, I sat on the SAT committee, but it also gives the public an opportunity to weigh in. And that's essential when you're going to do a study, because you might have a community that's not going to like that kind of lighting. This will give the opportunity to those that live in the desert uplands a chance to look at the light, determine the levels, whether they like it or not, and whether they're satisfied. So we do need to give the public that opportunity. And you can only do this through a study. We can't just put a light and say, hey, this is what you're getting. This is an opportunity for those residents that live in that area to weigh in and to provide comment as we move forward. Is that correct?
Mayor, Vice Mayor, thank you. I did not mean to leave that out. The public input or the public outreach portion of this project is very important to us.
Thank you. I know we kind of paused in the middle of your presentation, these other budget adjustment items. Are there?
Yeah, but this isn't relevant to what was on the agenda. So we just, well, you know, it's here in the budget to move forward. So we can go on to the next one. Thank you.
Real quickly, again, since you're seeing it on the screen, although it's not what you might be seeing at your spots on the dais, ADA collection is simply to take measurements of existing curb ramps and sidewalks on our major arterial streets and some other significant streets. This is identifying barriers to compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act, which, as I'm sure you're aware, anytime we're doing street work, we have to bring the existing infrastructure up to today's ADA standards, and this will help in that effort. The next item is a proposed HAWC, high-intensity activated crosswalk, now known as a pedestrian hybrid beacon, that has been requested by residents on the north side of University Drive in the Evergreen subdivision. Right now, if those folks are wishing to walk to downtown Mesa, depending on where they live, they may have quite a bit of walking to do to either get over to Center Street on the east or to Country Club on the west. So staff is put in a proposed amount to construct a pedestrian crossing at Grand and University, which is roughly the halfway point between Center and Country Club.
Now, that's an interesting idea. That's mid-block. From what it historically has been, have you done traffic studies, or is there some? I understand the neighborhood has requested it, but has there been any engineering work done to justify doing this? I mean, because we could do this all over the town if we decide that we need crosswalks in the middle of intersection, or what traditionally we have, where we traditionally haven't had a control.
Mayor, I think that's a fair statement. I think there are other locations that we could identify going forward. I think the staff could certainly take a broader look at the whole city. Part of the challenge is measuring what's not there today. You know, how many more people would cross or would cross here if a signal were there? That's a challenge because, as I'm sure you know, crossing University, especially at this time of the day, you know, you'd have to be pretty brave soul to dart across the street right now. So I do think we need to be selective. You know, these are not installations we want to put everywhere, but I do believe they have their place, and I do think this crossing would get used.
Mayor and Council, I think, and that's a great point, Mayor, I think there's quite a bit of interest in the neighborhood to do this. One of the things I would ask is maybe this item as well as what we're doing with the lighting in front of you, but I would appreciate it if it would be okay that maybe these are good discussions with these projects to have a discussion with the SAC committee, just to kind of get in a, you know, what is the policy? What should be the policy? How do we measure it? I mean, it's hard to measure it. We've had good success, though, with the HAWCs. We've installed them when we did the improvements on Mesa Drive, and they were successful because we had a lot of mid-block crossers. And so I think that's helped. We've done Sossaman, I think, is one. We've done one off of Brown, two of them off of Brown. So they're becoming more popular, but I think from a budgetary standpoint and the policy, we kind of need to evaluate, how do we evaluate what is the priority and how we do this? So I think this one, because of the interest in the neighborhood and wanting to come into the downtown, we could move forward. But after this, I think it would be helpful maybe to use the, have, go to the SAC committee and kind of have a discussion about coming up with some recommended policies so that we can maybe every year set aside so much funds for a hawk, and then we could take, you know, interest from different neighborhoods or council members of installing those, and then prioritize them each year and make that evaluation if that might work for the council. So that would help us anyway in dealing with these requests.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to this. I guess I'm just saying it seems rather arbitrary that we just do. I'd like to know what criteria we meet in terms of traffic or
right.
neighborhood interest to trigger expending almost $300,000. We could do that all over the town.
Right. Frankly.
And I've had some complaints in emails from folks about some of the crossings at canal paths. And just the timing of it, where you know they're triggered. I imagine very similar to these devices. Yeah. You're triggered by a pedestrian wanting to cross, and typically it's one person, one bicycle. That person crosses, and traffic remains stopped. You know,
yeah,
to allow a large number of people to cross. The suggestion was made that after the timing of that might need to be, and I'm not a traffic engineer, so I apologize for stepping into your field, but that maybe after a shorter period of time it goes to a blinking light, and the instruction is if there are continue to be pedestrians in the crosswalk, they have the right of way. Don't run them over. But
that's always a good advice.
Yeah. Yeah.
But maybe we
that works on the hawks. I don't know if it works.
Quieter.
So, Mayor, just I think a couple points to that, hopefully.
We've made a conscious decision not to put in the hawks at canal crossings because of the large amount of bicycle users we have on our canal trails that typically they can get across the intersection, obviously faster than a pedestrian. And so during that flash-don't-walk time, bicycles are still entering the crosswalk when you have the flashing red of the pedestrian hybrid beacon, and it creates a safety issue. So that's why we've chosen to do a full traffic signal at the canal crossings. To go along with the point of trying not to stop large platoons of traffic for one person crossing, we've been experimenting, and we were working with NAU this past year to be able to coordinate our canal crossing traffic signals. So when there was a certain threshold of vehicles on the roadway, I think we chose 800 vehicles in an hour in a certain direction, that those canal crossings would actually hold for the vehicles. But then during off-peak times, the signals would activate quickly for the pedestrians.
And I'm not suggesting that it's not appropriate to stop for one pedestrian or one bicycle. It is, but I'm just saying that seems to be the typical scenario. So it's a fairly short window that you need to stop traffic rather than for a long period of time. Mr. Thompson.
Mayor, I think the one on Mesa Drive, if I'm correct, I believe it says proceed if intersection's clear.
So that's a distinction that they're making. So those are known as the hawks.
Yeah, hawks.
And they allow for the, explain it, Eric, how that changes to the flashing red and how that's different than the others.
With the hawks and the flashing red, you're able to pull up essentially to the crosswalk. And if the pedestrian is on the other side of the street or if there's no pedestrian left there, you're able to proceed through the crosswalk.
So there's a flashing
red. There's a flashing red,
which
correct.
Tells proceed if clear.
If clear, yes.
So the solid red is obviously stop and hold, and then it switches to flashing, as Eric says, as the pedestrian or bicyclist is moving across. And then
so, Cal, we have those on, like, Mesa Drive, Sossaman, Brown, which allows for that to take place, but not at the canals because of concern about the conflict with the bikes. But, Mayor, we'll look at what adjustments we can make, but I think we get that feedback, too, in trying to make those adjustments.
Yeah, I know we're short on time, so I'll continue the conversation later. But thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. And lastly, is a proposal to create a Southeast Area Transportation and Land Use Plan. We're seeking $150,000. I know on the screen it shows 50. The idea is through the Future State Route 24
corridor or part of it existing, part of it future, is to create a transportation and land use plan where we're matching the expected land uses with our transportation needs running mostly north and south, but we could also take a look at some of the east-west roads in the southeast part of our city. Obviously, we're expecting growth in that area, and we also want to consider not just what's happening in Mesa, but the transportation plans for Pinal County and for Queen Creek to our south to make sure that we are investing in our transportation infrastructure, putting the right money to the right locations at the right time.
So, Mayor and Council, we're with the announcement that we have now the dates for the extension of Route 24 all the way to Ironwood.
Correct.
That is now creating quite a bit of activity. I'm already having developers coming to my office talking about what the city's network will look like, whether it's Signal Butte, whether it's Meridian, and then obviously, as was mentioned, what Queen Creek's doing to the farther to the south and how all that works together. So I just feel like this is a good time for us to get ahead. I don't know if we're ahead. Catch up with the kind of speculation that's going on about not only the transportation system out there, but then this would be joined up with John and his folks in looking at land uses, making sure our general plan and other conditions of land, proposed land use, match up with the type of infrastructure and the volumes of traffic we expect to see out there.
Thank you. So in case anyone hadn't heard what Mr. Brady, there was a reallocation of state transportation dollars, and State Route 24 is now funded
right. And
will be functioning all the way to Pinal County in 2021.
Yes.
So that's good news for all those developers and folks that are stuck in traffic out in that part of town.
That's right.
So that sounds like a great idea to me.
Looking to the future, maintain our existing infrastructure and obviously plan for new development. With that, we'd be happy to answer any further questions that you might have.
Mr. Thompson.
Chris, a few of us had breakfast with Congressman Biggs last week, and one of the questions that I asked him was, what does he foresee as far as a infrastructure funding in the president's budget? And he said he is, the appetite is there, I think, from Congress. That he doesn't believe that it will be as much as the president is asking for, but he knows there will be something. And I asked if that's going to trickle from federal to state to county to local, and as a local government, will we be getting any of these infrastructure funds? And he said, absolutely, we will. So my question is, do we have any unfunded projects in transportation that we could be, that we could easily have shovel ready in the event that we do have some infrastructure funding, and the same thing for water, wastewater, and some of our other departments as well, the energy services side as well, because I think it's important that we have projects ready if there is funding available and we get it to actually go out and be the first in line, per se.
Yeah, Mayor Councilman Thompson, you said the key word there is shovel ready. That's where we found that our best opportunity to access federal dollars is to have projects that are shovel ready, not that are in some kind of concept design. So we need, and I think we have a few, not I don't know how many we have, but and also they're typically looking for certain types of projects, major arterials, freeways, usually kind of the top of the list. So I think this is like the 24 is really just the beginning of the 24. The full intersections and the ramps still would have to be added at some time in the future.
Correct.
So doing studies like this, and we can continue to work on a list, as you're suggesting, to make sure we've identified or have projects that, if we haven't identified yet, that we're working on to get to the point where shovel ready. Now, sometimes that requires us to spend a little money ahead of time to go through what phase, usually design,
Mr. Brady, certainly you have to go through design, possibly starting environmental work.
Environmental work,
The federal dollars usually come with some additional restrictions, so anything that we could do ahead of time would certainly help.
But we can start working on those kind of projects.
Mm-hmm. Gateway Airport comes to mind as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, all the infrastructure on the east side, yep.
Yes, broadband is infrastructure as well.
Broadband. Well, and we have, for example, we have in the CIP currently doing the design work for Broadway. I don't know if that would fit into a major arterial
We would need to go further. The current project is what's called a corridor analysis, so we would, when that's finished, we'd want to proceed directly into design, but that certainly could be a good candidate.
Okay. So we'll keep looking, but yeah, those are important points to follow up on.
I think some of this will probably be coordinated. The money will likely go through the governor's offices as opposed directly to cities. And so it'd be good to have a short
usually
list.
It'll usually go through MAG. That's how we've done it in the past. That's usually typically how it's done.
Gentlemen, any questions of these gentlemen about transportation? Great presentation. Thank you very much. We will move on, Mr. Brady, to transit or to economic development.
Your choice, Mayor.
Mr. Jebziniak looks like he's ready to go.
Bill, I don't think you're going to be able to you won't be able to get him to sit down, so I think you're going to keep him up there.
Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor, members of council. It's good to be here. Let me start with a couple introductions. David Packard, management assistant in the department, and everyone I think knows Jay O'Donnell, who's the assistant economic development director. So, real quick, to get started here, the first slide is a copy of our mission and goals. It's all part of our three-year strategic plan that you see a picture of. That's a document that has been worked on internally over the years. We really focus especially on the goals with not just creating and retaining jobs, but high-quality jobs. I think that's an important piece of the puzzle. It's 125% of county median is what we typically go after. With building a sustainable community, this is where we're really trying to diversify Mesa's economy. And we're not dependent on one industry or another, so that we're really more balanced as we approach things. And then transformative projects are ones that are usually responsive to your priorities. So, for example, some of the things we've taken a very big lead role on over the years have been Higher Education Initiative, AZ Labs, LaunchPoint was another one along the way. We have four key performance measures that we really follow, and they're listed there. And you can see some of the progress we've had over the last 3 years. And these are just projects that we've assisted with along the way. So we've had some great success in some of those numbers. But each year we adjust those performance measures so that we can adjust to what's going on in the economy. And I think the strategic plan really keeps us focused on your priorities as well. Project successes. You can see, I think you know most of these higher profile projects, the Global Command Center, Dexcom with the ribbon cutting next week as well, and Santander and so forth. Some of the awards, we've been fortunate enough to be recognized with 16 different awards from international groups to statewide groups over the last 5 years or so. And I think that's really says a lot about the effort from staff and the overall economic development effort. And one of the things we're putting ourselves through currently is an accreditation effort. And this is, there's only 54 accredited economic development organizations across the country. And we've started through this process. So it's almost like our peers coming in and looking at 19 different criteria, David, if I remember right, that take a look at how do we do things better, what are we doing right, what can we improve upon. So this continuous improvement for us is, I think, a big step. We're looking forward to that feedback. That'll actually should be completed before the end of this fiscal year. So we're anxious to keep that piece moving as well. I thought it'd be important here to touch on, this is the current pipeline. And it's important, the numbers are big, they can be impressive, but we're not gonna land, we play well in certain industry segments, others we don't, but there are 55 active projects that we're currently working on. Staff's got their fingers into it and moving a lot of information around on. It takes time, we're coordinating with GPEC, Greater Phoenix Economic Council, Arizona Commerce Authority as well, and some of these leads are what we've developed ourselves. There's a very robust pipeline out there today. And I'm going to read a couple of numbers. Councilmember Freeman's been trying to give me more data here along the way. So currently, these are through March of 17, there are 85 office prospects in Greater Phoenix in market looking for space. Approximately 18 of those are looking for over 100,000 square feet. So it gives you an idea where the office market's at, and what we have and don't have will be responsive to how we can play in some of those office categories. The second number I'll throw at you is 109 total industrial prospects in the market today. And I think that's a big number, and approximately 55 of those are over 100,000 square feet. So again, there's demand, big demand for big square footage, and sometimes when you don't have it, you don't compete well. So thus the continued push for additional product being made available. Businesses don't like to wait all too long, if you will. Getting into the funding sources a little bit. We primarily have four different funding sources. I can see there the general fund, economic development projects, the special fund, and the Falcon Field piece. So while it appears we have a very large budget, very substantial budget, in reality our budget includes a lot of contracts, a lot of different project budgets and pass-through expenses. So let me get into that in some detail here. General fund, pretty straightforward, personnel, airport. So Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport has $1.7 million is our regional cost, a regional share of our of that airport, and that's in our budget. The City Business Improvement District, about $235,000. It's our self-assessment on city-owned properties and to help fund the Downtown Mesa Association. And then our funding for GPEC is $206,000 this year, and that's based on a formula instead of per capita formula. So while our population's going up, some of these numbers are going to go up at the same time. Jumping over into the economic development projects, the first one there is Able Engineering. A few years ago, we were very creative under Mr. Brady's leadership to really stand up Able Engineering and really pledge some of the money that is talked about under the general fund to push a bond out. And the cost of that bond, the payment for that bond's in our budget. We do receive the same amount of revenue, so it is a pass-through, so a balance, if you will, along the way. AZ Labs. Due to the secured nature of that facility, we went out and hired Alliance Science and Technology now a few years ago. During the defense cuts and sequestration, we were actually able to negotiate that contract backwards. So while the budget appears to be higher, the actual spend is about $800,000 less just for Alliance management. So that's a big savings every year, but we are budget because it was a longer-term contract. Also included in that is utilities at AZ Labs. Moving on to Mesa Center for Higher Education and Launch Point. Combined, that's about a $450,000 budget, more or less. And the same things we've done there. After a year or two of operating, we found a substantial cost savings. Two of those, DH Pace and Valor IT, had about a $200,000 combined contract. We're now at $60,000. So you're budgeted here. Your actual spend is down substantially lower. So that's, again, what makes up some of these higher numbers along the way. Under special fund
move on. I understand AZ Labs has improved tremendously over the last couple of years, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong, aren't we pretty much close to breaking even there?
I think we're substantially higher than what we were just a few years ago. We are not at break even today. We're pending a couple of major contracts, which would be very helpful. But we are up just shy of about $1 million in revenue today. So it is growing. We have a couple of big names, a lot of research, and you can tell there's money being spent in the defense industry as well. Okay. Special fund parking management is what I call a separate category for us. You get two different pieces of DMA, so that we've split them up into two different funding, and then the utilities for all the parking garages are in our contract there, or budget as well. And then we do split an employee with Falcon Field, and that's what that other funding source is. So looking more specifically at the numbers, and again, we try to be very careful with our budget management, but again, you'll notice the actuals are less than the adopted budgets, two big reasons. Again, the contract savings, you know, just on those two items I've talked about, you've got about $1 million in contract savings between the Alion contract and the DH PACE over at Mesa Center for Higher Education. And the other item we have, redevelopment areas is a great example. That money actually rolls forward first year of the redevelopment area for Southwest Mesa. We're not complete with it, so we carried the money forward. It then shows in this year's budget. Most of that will be spent, I think, this current year, but there probably will be a little bit rolled over from Southwest. And you also, the two additional areas that are approximately $150,000 each that are, if not spent, will be rolled over, which only a percentage of that will be spent going forward. That, to me, I think tells a story on especially the economic development projects line item, the difference between actuals and the actual adopted budgets that are there as well. As far as budget adjustments for the year, we did our part to contribute towards the overall city cut for $50,000, and then we have reprogrammed an extra $15,000, and this is really developing. We've got signature events that are in planning, roundtables with the existing clients that are being looked at as well, and as well as increased marketing around entrepreneurship and small business. So that's just a tip of the iceberg, I think, for small business and entrepreneurship going forward. I think that pretty much wraps up the budget presentation, and we're open for questions.
Thank you, Bill. Questions? Mr. Winkle.
Thanks a lot for being here. Is that small business and entrepreneurship, $15,000, that's for the extension of the light rail line, or is that in general?
That's in general. That's a entrepreneurship focus. That is something we're in the process of really developing for the next year. But it's, again, I think a start to, it will be supplementing that through our other marketing budgets and whatever else we can identify as our strategic little effort around small business and entrepreneurship.
Okay, thanks.
Great. Any other questions for Mr. Jevgeniak? Thank you very much, Bill.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. That was easy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
All right. Transit. Good to have you with us.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Jody Sorrell. I'm the Transit Director. And we're just going to give you this afternoon a quick update on our transit budget for next year. The mission of transit is to really work collaboratively with our regional partners. Transit is one of the few services that just doesn't stop at our borders. In order to provide good quality transit, we've got to work with our neighboring cities, Gilbert, Chandler, Tempe, even into Phoenix with the light rail. Our primary responsibilities in transit is the light rail system, working with Valley Metro to operate that. And just to kind of give you a quick, we have 3.8 miles of light rail, which represents just over 14% of the entire light rail system. Our fixed route bus service, we have 19 bus routes in the city that operate from a various, you'll see in a future slide, different degrees of funding. Some of them are regionally funded with Prop 400, and some of them are locally funded out of the transit fund, which is backfilled with the general fund. And then we have paratransit, dial-a-ride service, and ride choice. Our dial-a-ride service is an ADA requirement where we must provide complimentary paratransit service within 3/4 miles of a bus route. Currently, we provide that citywide in Mesa, and we provide about 130,000 trips a year. Ride choice is an alternative that we offer to dial-a-ride for residents 65 and over and who are disabled, where you can call a cab, and we will subsidize part of that cab trip. And we carry about 22,000 trips a year on ride choice. And then we have facility operations and maintenance. Mesa has about 750 bus stops, 4 park and rides, and 2 transit centers that we maintain. So when you see the park and rides along the light rail system, those are not our park and rides that we maintain. Valley Metro maintains those. Some of our performance measures, obviously transit, a lot of it is driven by ridership. So for this fiscal year, our light rail target is 2.3 million riders. And our actual through February is just over 1.5 million. So we are on track to hit about 2.3, just probably a little under 2.3 million boardings for this fiscal year. Our bus ridership, our target is 4.6 million. We're coming in a little lower, and we're not unusual to every transit agency in the country is having their bus ridership is declining a little bit. A big part of that is because gas prices are so low, and you see that as gas prices fluctuate, so does the transit ridership. The other element that is kind of driving that is in the Valley, most of our bus service operates every 30 minutes, and it's hard for people if they have a choice to wait that 30 minutes, where the light rail operates every 12 minutes, so you know it's fairly consistent on when, and it's not a long wait if you choose to wait for that. Our dial-a-ride target this year is 127,000 trips. We want to be under that. If we don't hit our target on this one, that's a good thing. And so we're on track for about 88,000 trips. And Ride Choice, our target's 15,000 this year, and we're actually going to hit, we're at 19,000 now, so we'll be close to that 23,000 number. Our park and ride facilities, which is where really a lot of our express buses run out of, and we're at about 57% usage on that, and they vary. The park and ride we have at Superstition Springs Mall is about 80% capacity. The two off Power Road and the 202 are between 60 and 75% capacity, and the one off Country Club down there by Juanita is about 35% capacity. So some recent accomplishments that we're kind of proud of is we are implementing a transit advertising program this year. In October, the council approved that contract, and actually our first ads just went up today at Mesa Drive in Maine. So if you happen to drive by there. We began construction of the Gilbert Road Light Rail Extension in October. And when we make changes to our service, we really try to make it so that we're getting the most bang out of our buck and trying to make it as efficient. And we consolidated a couple routes into one route along certain corridors on Main Street and Country Club. We eliminated that link service and are operating the service on a more regular, frequent basis. And we've gradually seen slowly, we've stopped the decline, and we're starting to see an increase in that ridership. From a regional perspective, some accomplishments that happened that are good things is for our dial-a-ride passengers, we eliminated the regional transfer. So if you previously to this fiscal year, if you were traveling from Mesa to Phoenix, you dial-a-ride would take you to somewhere on the border of Tempe and Phoenix, and you'd have to get out of an East Valley dial-a-ride, wait at maybe a Bash's or a CVS pharmacy and wait for a Phoenix dial-a-ride, which could take up to an hour to come. So now they don't have to wait that. Our most vulnerable members of our community don't have to wait for that transfer. It's a one-seat trip. And then in June, I'm happy to say the region is eliminating the premium onboard fare to get on the bus. So right now, a day pass for a regular rider is $4. If you buy that day pass at a ticket vending machine or pre-buy it, it's $4. If you get on the bus and buy a day pass, it's $6. So that $2 premium is being eliminated June 1st, so it will be $4. And hopefully that will help also with some of the ridership issues. I wanted to share this slide so that we had a really clear picture on what how much Mesa funds for transit and how much the Mesa gets from Prop 400 and how important Prop 400 is for our transit system. So these numbers, I want to stress, are net numbers. So fares, advertising, preventative maintenance numbers, Arizona lottery funds that help fund light rail, offset our light rail costs are taken out of here. So when you see a number on the next slide, you don't, you understand that. So we're probably going to net out this year, net cost the city for light rail is $4 million. Our bus service, we will pay $43 million for $4.3 million for bus, but we also get $9.2 million from the regional sales tax. For paratransit, it's $1.1 million from the transit fund and $3.3 million from the region, which is pretty significant. And then Ride Choice, we do get a new Freedom grant to help offset some of that. In looking at our year-end estimate and our budget estimates, some things to kind of point out and note is we're expecting light rail fare recovery, even though ridership may go up slightly, to the fare recovery to remain flat. A big part of that is a lot of people like to use the reduced fare, which is a $2 day pass. and there's no mechanism to keep me from going up and buying a reduced fare. So we're working on a more, Valley Metro and the City of Phoenix are working on a more, where you have to have a reduced fare ID card with a chip that you have to insert that in before you can purchase a reduced fare card. We do get almost $1.3 million from the Arizona Lottery to offset our transit operations, and we do apply that to light rail. And then the grants and reimbursement, a lot of those numbers coming in are reimbursements that we get back from back to the city from our Gilbert Road light rail construction through reimbursing staff time and reimbursing the city for real estate acquisition. When you get down to the expenses, you'll see a significant increase in light rail operations for this year. A big part of that is due to there's some initiatives that the Valley Metro Board has undertaken as far as adding Wi-Fi to all of the light rail vehicles. There's that cost that we'll have to bear our burden of. And then there's a bigger push for security on the light rail and adding fare officers as well as hiring off-duty police officers to patrol the platform so that the platforms now become, you're supposed to, when you get on the platform, you're supposed to have a valid fare. So now they're refocusing and really focusing on making sure the people on the platforms have a valid fare rather than somebody getting on the train and then maybe getting off when they see a fare officer come on. Our fixed route numbers are up slightly, and a lot of that is due to the reduced fare also is affecting the bus, but also we typically get an alternative fuel tax credit from the federal government that hasn't been applied to this number because we don't know if the current administration will keep with that contract. And our paratransit is also up slightly, and part of that is we have a new contract and we're changing slightly how we provide Dial a Ride and Ride Choice. So some of those costs have gone up slightly. Two items that aren't in the adopted or in the proposed budget for next fiscal year that we would like to have funding to move forward. They're an investment in a future sales tax initiative. One is the Fiesta District Downtown Chandler Alternatives Analysis. About 2 years ago, we launched a feasibility study to look at extending light rail somewhere from the from Main and Dobson area down into downtown Chandler. We found that for Mesa, that for this corridor, it works out well. We'd like to enter into an AA, do an alternatives analysis study, which will really define a route, a preferred corridor. We'll end with council adopting a locally preferred corridor for the study. It will identify the type of technology, where the stations will go, what the street will look like, and all of this will put us in a position to have a project ready when we start negotiations for a future sales tax regional sales tax initiative for the Valley. The study would cost us $900,000, but we would spread that over three fiscal years. It would be a two-year study, but the costs would spread over three fiscal years.
Would that be split with City of Chandler as well?
It would be. $900,000 is our share. The total study would be about $1.5 million. And then the other one we would like to look at is work with the City of Tempe to look at extending streetcar down Rio Salado into the Riverview area and how that might work. And this would be a partnership with the City of Tempe. We would look at short, mid, and long-term options and how we can put ourselves in a position to be it ready to be added to a future sales tax initiative, and if it moves forward, to be able to what we have to do to be competitive for federal funding at that level. And this study would be $300,000 spread over two fiscal years. It would be a two-year study, and this also is not included in the proposed budget that was out there. And finally, I just want to end a little bit talking about Dial a Ride. Dial a Ride is a service, as I said, that we have to operate within 3/4 miles of a bus route as mandated by the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990. You can see what we've done is we've looked at our projected growth through the life of Prop 400 for Dial a Ride, and between now and the next 8 years, we're looking at 70,000 to 70,000 more riders to the system each year. Dial a Ride is an expensive service to operate. If you look at the average cost, this is the net cost per trip. For light rail, it costs us $2.25 per boarding. For bus, it's $4.07. Ride choice is about $8.45. And Dollar Ride is about $31 a trip. We obviously would like to see more people transition to Ride Choice, which is we're making some changes to Ride Choice to make that more attractive to riders, to our residents who have to go 6 miles or less than what we currently are offering. But we also, in order to manage this, manage our growth of our system, we may want to look at bringing Dollar Ride into the federal minimum of 3/4 mile. Right now, we offer it citywide.
Mr. Thompson.
Jody, on Dollar Ride, on the, how many people use the local versus regional?
Most of our people are using, most of our residents are using local. Regional is about 5% of our trips, but a regional trip is much more expensive.
On the local, what is the average mileage, I guess, the range?
The average trip is about 8 miles on Dollar Ride, and the majority of our trips, the majority of our local trips, the big bulk of them is 6 miles or less.
Mr. Glover.
If we were to bring Dollar Ride into what is federally mandated, how much would that save us as a city? And can you explain what is federally mandated for everybody else who might
Sure.
know?
So federally mandated is within 3/4 miles of a bus route. So what we're looking at is wherever we have a bus route, if you draw a 3/4 mile bumper on either side, that would be our area. You know, what that comes down to is there's we're further east. The furthest east we would have to provide Dollar Ride, legally required, would be about Sossaman Road. We provide Dollar Ride citywide right now. So anywhere in the city you could ride it. If we go to the 3/4 mile, what I call the 3/4 mile rule in Dollar Ride, it would not necessarily, it would stem our increases. So we would be able to more proactively manage our growth, which as we have, as a community, as our community gets older, the baby boomers get older, demand is just going to increase that much more. So that would just help us manage our growth to within a reasonable level. And again, this we want, what we're going to do this next year is we're really going to look at where are Dollar Ride riders going, where they live, how heavy users are they going, can we transition? We're trying, we're going to make a big push as much to transition as much to Ride Choice. My staff and I are going to be going out to senior centers, assisted living facilities, putting kind of augmenting what Valley Metro does just that much more to create an awareness of that. But there's the reality is with Dollar Ride, there's only so much we can do with changing a service model to manage that growth. And we'll do what council wants, but I always like to kind of throw that out and make that awareness out there.
Mayor and Council, what Jody's talking about is something we really would like the council at least to give us an opportunity to evaluate. The citywide option for our Dial Ride, as you saw, those growth factors is significant from a cost perspective for the city. And as much as we try to encourage the utilization of the lower cost options, the Dial Ride is for many. It's a door to destination option, but it costs the general fund quite a bit. If we were to transition back to what the federal government requires us to do, obviously that would shrink down those that would be eligible. So if we were going to do that, we'd want to do it with lots of notice, let individuals know about that change. Some come to rely upon these richly subsidized transportation options. So we'd want to be able to give them that option. But at the same time, it would encourage, I think it's something for us to look at from a land use perspective, recognizing if we were to do that, that's where we would like, you know, that's where we encourage people to live within those transit corridors and use it so they'll have the options of whether it's light rail or bus for their options of transportation. So, because right now, just based on a lot of other issues, one of the reasons that kind of why we're reluctant to add bus service in the city where it may be needed is maybe not so much about the impact once you add it, but it's also, again, it continues to, if we were to reduce, it impacts the Dial Ride scope also. So it's just something we have to be careful with.
If we were to move back to the federally mandated mm-hmm. amount, and but we'd extended our bus routes, then that's...
That would extend the dial ride, yeah.
Dumb question before we go to Mr. Winkle. What's the difference between ride choice and dial a ride, and who can take advantage? Can anyone call up, or do you need to fall within a certain qualification?
No, dial a ride, you need to be ADA certified through the Valley Metro. They have a mobility center down near 44th and Washington that if somebody wants to try to qualify for dial a ride, they go down there and they put them through, like, can you walk on different pavement levels? Can you, how far can you walk? Different things. And in Mesa, Dial-A-Ride is only ADA. You have to be ADA certified to use Dial-A-Ride. And Dial-A-Ride requires you to make your reservation 24 hours in advance. Our new model will put a more emphasis on a shared trip than our current model. So it could be two or three people in a van going somewhere. The ride choice program is you can pick up the is open to any resident 65 and over disabled. The new model we're going to launch in July. The current model is the city subsidizes 30% of your cab ride up to $100 a month. So you can buy a book of $10 worth of taxi trip for $3. We pay 70% of that cab ride trip. And so what we're changing to in July 1 is more of a model they use in Denver, where we will cap the number of trips you have each month at 16 trips a month you can take. You pay $3 for a trip up to 15 miles. And then anything over 15 miles for that trip, the resident is responsible for. So the city's exposure is $15 per trip at most, which is still significantly less than paying $32 for a Dial-A-Ride trip. And so we'll cap that at 16. Ride choice, we have the flexibility of, being able to modify it if we need to see where the usage is, and we have a little bit more flexibility with that. But I think the biggest advantage for ride choice is you can call that same day. And that's what we're seeing right now with ride choice is people are using that as a backup to Dial-A-Ride, not as an alternative to Dial-A-Ride. So if they can't book their Dial-A-Ride trip that day or they forget, then they'll just fall back on ride choice for the day they need to take their trip.
Thank you. Mr. Winkle.
So ride choice is ADA compliant then? At least you could if you have...
The taxis are not required to be, unlike Dial-A-Ride, but they do have ADA accessible vans and equipment for that. You just have to request that when you call.
Have we ever looked into using Lyft or Uber or something like that?
That's something as an agency, as a region, we're looking into, and we're working with Valley Metro is leading that charge to do that. So we hope to see what happens with that in the next year or so. We're really focusing on getting this new Dial-A-Ride contract up and operating and making sure everybody understands the software and how to book their trips.
Thanks, Julie, for your presentation. Paratransit, is that for people with disabilities or?
Paratransit is kind of like, and you'll start hearing that more. So when Dial-A-Ride first started, it was Dial-A-Ride. And then over the years, I think somebody decided Dial-A-Ride just didn't sound enough, so paratransit sounded better. So they started switching the services to be more of a paratransit. We use it for budgeting purposes as kind of an umbrella for services for our senior community.
Okay.
Paratransit also includes the bus, right?
No.
No.
The bus as a whole separate operates under a fixed route umbrella.
And help me understand on the Fiesta Downtown Chandler alternatives analysis, why are we engaged in that? I mean, help me understand the logistics behind that to run bus routes down to Downtown Chandler to Fiesta District.
Well, this is not so much for buses. This is for light rail or streetcar option.
Okay.
We entered into this feasibility study with Chandler about 2 years ago to really see if that would be feasible to extend it and really to kind of look at putting ourselves in a position to have some projects ready for a future sales tax initiative, because Prop 400 expires in 2026. So in the next couple years, we'll be having discussions on what projects might go into a future sales tax initiative. And we wanted to have some projects ready to possibly go. When we were looking at, when the first starter line of light rail was built, one of the corridors being considered in Mesa was the Southern Avenue corridor, because it is our highest ridership bus route in the city. And you need to have a good underlying bus service to support a light rail project like that. So we've spent the last couple years working with Chandler and Valley Metro staff to evaluate if it makes sense going down this corridor. There is a ridership demand. It does look like a viable corridor, so that's why we'd like to take it to that next step so that we'd be more competitive when it came to that process.
Mayor, Councilman Freeman, I think it's certainly the Chandler leg of this. Maybe I think there's some discussion in Chandler about whether or not how feasible that might be for them. For Mesa, though, having another parallel track, I think what interests us from a volume perspective or demand perspective is running down Dobson, down Southern, and picking up a lot of the activity around the many multi-family units we have down there, as well as the Fiesta Mall, thinking that may be an opportunity for us. So just for the Mesa portion, I guess I would say, it's intriguing to us that that could be a significant, we could pick up a significant amount of ridership just in the Mesa side, with or without the Chandler Lake being completed. But I think Chandler's discussing whether they're interested in going all the way into downtown Chandler. They don't have access to light rail. Otherwise, they have to come up this route and join into Mesa.
Okay. Thank you. One last question. I got an email from a 15-year-old young man. He rides the Buzz, and I sent it, forwarded it to you. But just, I'm going to read it to you. My request is for your consideration on extending the hours of the Buzz. That's because the bus only runs till 7:30 p.m. on weekdays compared to other bus routes such as the Country Club one that runs past to 10. So he wants to work and utilize the Buzz system. So the Buzz only ends at 7:30. Is there any thought of extending that?
Yes, Mayor, Councilmember Freeman. The Buzz is one of our locally funded routes, and Country Club is a regionally funded route. Mm-hmm. Part of the challenges we have with some of our locally funded routes is they don't run later at night. The Buzz isn't the only one. Stapley Road ends at 6:30. Service ends at 6:30 at night. And not all of them, and Saturday service is on an hour frequency, and many of them don't have Sunday service. So what we do every year with Valley Metro is we evaluate what routes and what options might make sense to add service to that. Whether it's, you know, regionally funded, obviously we have certain criteria we need to meet with Valley Metro to add the Prop 400 service. But with our local routes, it would have to go back into competing and budget-wise. And we are going to evaluate that. We've evaluated it in the past, and it's on our list to evaluate for this next fiscal year to see where that ridership is. And because I had the same email forwarded to me from Councilman Whitaker's office as well. So we're going to look at that, and we may survey the riders to see what their preferences, if their preferences to have it served later on a weekday or to have Sunday service or what that is, and we can look at that and how it fits for next year's budget.
Okay, thank you.
Jody, great presentation. I'm sorry, I do have a couple of more questions. We all know where Mesa is back in high growth mode. We issued more building permits than Phoenix did last month, and particularly out in Mr. Thompson's area in Southeast Mesa, population is growing pretty significantly, but we're not expanding our bus routes. So it seems like the more years that we continue to experience significant population growth, but we stick with the current, we don't expand ridership routes, that doesn't really make a lot of sense. So at what point do we consider adding additional bike or bus routes? Do we need to do some sort of ridership demand study to see how far behind we are, or how do we address the increased growth?
Well, we did, was it 3 years ago now, we did our transit master plan that includes some routes for their out plan, I think in like 2025, 2030 timeframe. So what my group is doing, what we typically do is we've looked at the transit master plan, and as in the short, we did the transit master plan, I should back up, is a short term, mid term, and long term scenario. So we're looking at adding the service in the short term and the long term, or the short term and the mid term, working to the long term. Our Prop 400 funding, that's kind of already allocated to the routes that were in the measure. So if we wanted to add more service, we would have to look at adding that from local funds. It would be harder to add that unless we could extend some routes. But we can definitely work with planning and transportation to look at where those routes, what might make sense to add, to extend some of those routes.
So our medium and long-term plan right now does not anticipate adding additional bus routes?
Our long-term does extend some, but our medium does not, our midterm.
What's the tipping point between medium and long-term plan?
It's typically like, I think the tipping point is 20 years out from when it was adopted, so it would be about 2030.
So right now, and like you say, if we stick to the Prop 400 doesn't pay for any new bus routes, so through 2026, we're kind of stuck.
Well, there is an opportunity where we have, we can evaluate. For example, we have a route on Williamsfield that ends down there. You know, we can evaluate some existing east-west routes to see if it's an opportunity to extend it. I'm trying to think. Elliott Road is also one that we divert. We divert at Power, and we divert it north to Baseline. It does a loop through, I can't think of the development. It's a senior community up there. Yes, Sunland Springs. And then it turns back and goes up to Superstition Springs Mall. So that might be one that we, Elliott, we could look at extending further east and not extend it up to Superstition Springs Mall for that connection. So those are things that we can look at that we could do now with kind of some of our existing regional funds if that was something you wanted to do.
So we could extend some existing routes and possibly qualify for Prop 400 funding.
Correct.
But in terms of adding additional routes, that's where we wouldn't have any additional funding under Prop 400.
There's a process for adding a route that's not wasn't in the Prop 400 funding.
Okay.
It would be easier and probably quicker to look at just extending some existing service if we could.
I think we all get complaints about folks in some of these underserved, I know you do, parts of town asking for extended bus routes. So to the extent we can find any funding to do that, I would encourage us to take a look at that.
Okay.
Sooner than 20 years from now. Obviously, 2026 is going to come probably sooner than we want it to when Prop 400 goes away. So I think be supportive of the requests here that you talked about at the end of your presentation about studying the streetcar proposal with Tempe and the Chandler extension. I think the future of light rail is going to, I won't be around to make that decision, but I think going down Dobson and Southern, as Mr. Brady points out, between Mesa Community College, two of the busiest hospitals in the county, thousands and thousands of housing units, to me, it makes sense. I think ridership there would be, you know, kind of a guaranteed success. So in order to have our due diligence done in anticipation of Prop 500, I'm not sure when we have to do these studies. If it's next year, then maybe we need to start finding
more places to pay for it. Well, I think this suggests, Mayor, that it's at least a three-year process. So that puts us in 2020 or probably 2021.
It's a two-year study with funding over. So if we were to start it in this summer in 2017, it would be completed by the summer of 2019 at the earliest, assuming everything went on schedule.
So I guess Prop 500 is anyone's guess as to when that – doesn't have to wait for 2026, and I'm sure there's people chomping at the bit to do it before then, so – maybe sooner is better than later on that.
Right, and the idea, I think the further along we can get in the study, the alternative analysis study, which then can lead to making a decision on a locally preferred alternative, then allows us to lead towards helping us to tighten up any estimates and kind of what it's going to take to get that done. And that's where it makes projects very competitive. And assuming there's a Prop 500 that gets approved, because now you have a project that's ready to go early on in that period of time that if it's successfully passed, that's important. It kind of goes back to even the dollars that may come from the federal government. The further along you can get in the design, concept alternatives, that makes your project more competitive than a project that is still, people are just looking lines on a map.
So. My last question is, if the budget line item for transit is really $4 million this year, that to me seems low. Are there one-time expenses associated with the Gilbert Road extension? For example, I know we have to buy 3 new engines. I mean, there's maybe some one-time costs associated with that. Is that included in that $4 million
I think item? You're looking at just the fixed route bus service line item.
Okay.
The total operating cost for transit is $14.8 million.
Yeah, I thought I heard a $4 million number for light rail only.
Light rail was... the net cost for light rail is $4 million. So what that is there's a $7.5 million, almost $7.6 million in the budget for light rail. And then once we deduct out fare revenues, advertising, all the train wrap, the revenue we get, our share of the train wrap revenue, advertising on the platforms, preventive maintenance, okay. We provide the Arizona lottery funds, it takes it down to about $4 million.
So we're talking about two different things, though. Right. Jody's talking to you about operating costs.
Yeah.
You are asking questions about capital costs. So the way we're funding the construction of light rail, which included how many cars? Three. Three new cars that got put in, bundled in with that project, that capital project. Recall that way we've helped fund our portion of that is by the repurposing of some future Prop 400 dollars that's where those dollars are coming from the city. So those were capital dollars, project dollars that are funding that capital component. And then Jody's speaking to you about the operating expenses, which would then hit the city's general fund.
Correct. If you're looking for it on this budget summary, it's if you go down to project cost, the line item, the estimate for next fiscal year is $19 million. So that number includes...
I can see better far away.
That number is primarily made up of reimbursements for real estate acquisition, our local match for the Gilbert Road Light Rail extension, and reimbursements for staff time, and our staff time allocated for that.
Okay. Those are all related to the one-time expense of constructing the extension. Okay. That makes more sense. Thank you very much. Mr. Whitaker.
I've got one question. When you guys decide which path to take for the light rail, what variables are considered, or why are we looking to go south to Chandler rather than continuing the light rail east past Gilbert Road?
Well, one of the challenges that we have to continue east, so one of the big element to help drive a light rail alignment is, and we've used this, it's been the case all over the valley, is putting it on a corridor that has a high degree of bus ridership, because you're already pulling that. One of the challenges we have with going east to Gilbert Road is we don't have any north-south bus service until you get to Power Road to feed that corridor with transit ridership. So
From Gilbert to Power
on Main Street, there's nothing going north-south to help feed that light rail ridership. What the Fiesta District offers why that might be more attractive is Southern Avenue is our highest bus ridership route. It carries about 730,000 boardings a year on that route. It has good north-south connections of bus service. It has high-density employment centers between Banner Hospital, MCC, the Fiesta District, what's going on there. It has some high-density housing in there to help drive that ridership.
As far as the ridership numbers, is there some type of reimbursement or something that we get back from the transit if we put more people on the light rail, or is it just simply a goal to make sure more people are using it?
It's that fare box.
It's the fare box recovery. So on light rail, we get the fare box recovery for light rail of our share of what that fare box recovery is sent back to us.
And that's based upon ridership.
And that's based on ridership. And then that helps offset those ridership costs. It's a little different in that we get a check every month from the city of Phoenix with our ridership numbers.
Because they administer the program.
Yeah.
But our plan is, I mean, we haven't given up, it's still in our transit master plan to extend light rail from Gilbert going east. And we were not saying we wouldn't do that. But today, and the fact that Chandler approached us, I think, I don't know who approached him, but Chandler and Mesa council members got together and said, why don't we look at this leg going to the south? And from a, what it helps us with is not only the existing ridership that you're hearing, but in the past, it's what by those numbers help justify the federal, the FTA's involvement in these kind of projects too. This is what they're looking for, is that kind of ridership proven up by bus or by bus ridership versus we don't quite have that. Now you could argue the reason we don't have it further east is because we don't have a lot of bus routes out there, but that's something we'd have to address.
Yeah, I guess my only concern is I think from the downtown, the light rail really helped from an economic development perspective. And I think considering the city overall, if you look at a map of Mesa from west to east, if you continue down Main Street, you see like a bunch of white rooftops, which are a clear indication of all the manufactured housing that exists across Main Street. So I'm just wondering if we've considered the economic development that would come if we kept extending the light rail down Main Street, where I think is going to be a huge burden on our public safety in the coming years if we don't figure out a way to raise.
No, Mayor, and you're speaking our language. I think, Mayor and Council, maybe what we should do is also explore the options and position ourselves to think about that study, because we kind of had had two alternatives at Gilbert Road. But I think, I can't remember how we left it with council and the transit plan, because one was going down Gilbert and one was going, where did we leave that? Where did we go with that?
The transit master plan, so each midterm and long-term scenario has a scenario A and a scenario B to look at light rail continuing east on Main Street, or what would happen if light rail went south on Gilbert and then along the US 60. So we gave ourselves a lot of flexibility in that plan to be able to adapt.
But maybe we ought to bring back to council a discussion about start doing some of that preliminary work to kind of like we did on Dobson and Southern, start talking about what that might look like to extend light rail from Gilbert Road to Power and just start talking about it. Because you're right. I mean, we agree. This other option just kind of came up because there was a partnership and Chandler paid for the first part of the study. I can't remember what that was called, but they actually offered to pay for the first phase of that, but that shouldn't preclude us looking for going east on Main. But we could do that also.
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes absolute sense for Chandler to look into it from an economic development perspective as well. They'll be bringing in all those people off the light rail, but
Main Street. You're right. Going east is makes sense too.
And I think to Jeremy's point too, and I'll probably be dead before the long range plan ever extends. I think we'll probably all be dead by the time light rail gets out that far east. But we really should start looking at how we want to get the light rail to the airport, especially, you know, I've been looking at Ellsworth Road as being the ultimate corridor, because if you're going to eventually move the terminal to the east side of the airport, it makes sense to move it to Elliott, as well as since we've been talking to Union Pacific and so to others about the rail spur, it would be an opportunity for the transit up out of Tucson to come in, stop at the airport, disembark the train, and then jump on light rail and either go to Gateway or come into Mesa to take in some ball games or what have you.
Well, let's come back with some thoughts about what are some preliminary studies we can start to get that moving, because it's part of our plan. So,
thank you, Mr. Luna.
Jody, some of my constituents say that they used to be able to get a bus to the multi-generation center. And you know who they are, and because I'm sure you've heard from them. I hear from them often when I go to the multi-generation center. And they said that there was a bus going there, but during the recession, there was bus services cut. Is that something you're going to readdress, as the mayor alluded to, and study?
So we've looked at that in response to those constituents' requests. What happened was, yes, there was, at one point, the bus did serve there. And then when the economy went south, that was one of the diversions that, in order to save money, that got cut. Since that time, Valley Metro has the board has adopted some performance standards and measures that specifically addresses diversions and where how far we can divert and what we can do on a route. We've reached out to the senior center management, and at the time we talked to them, they were not that interested and actually asked us to remove the bus stop, the bus shelter that was at the facility. We can continue to monitor it and go back and, if you want, this year and survey some more. But the only two riders that were really going was for the constituents. The challenge that the other part of that challenge is there's people that said that they would ride the bus, but they didn't live near a bus route. So they were already taking Dial a Ride or having somebody driving them or driving themselves to get there. So we can go. We're happy to go back and keep surveying and to see what that ridership potential might be.
So, Mayor, I just wanted to make the point to both your question and to Councilmember Whitaker's question. This truly isn't either or as we're looking at what our options are through the Fiesta District versus going east Superstition area eventually out to the airport. It's both. But going to the point that I know Councilmember Thompson had made earlier, today, using the federal requirements, there's only one route that is competitive for federal funding right now in the city of Mesa, and that would be the Fiesta District study. And so in order to maximize our opportunities to draw down regional and federal funding, that's why to the question of why now, why this fiscal year versus next fiscal year, that's the reason why this suggestion is coming forward now, so that we can put ourselves in a position to be able to draw down those federal and regional funding. That's probably and could happen in the short term over the next several years, as a lot of the Prop 500 discussion has already started. That really started after Phoenix engaged in their local sales tax initiative and started putting out routes that they were looking to fund in Prop 500. Well, it would be incumbent upon all of us who have an interest in transit to make sure that we don't fall too far behind regionally. And so that's why the two suggestions that Jody brought forward today, both with the streetcar and with this, we believe are well positioned from a federal and regional position for funding in the near term.
Thank you. The qualifications are you actually need to prove that there will be ridership in order to get more federal funds to pay for the capital cost of the okay.
That makes Mayor, Councilmember Whitaker, that's exactly right. It's actually a really stringent criteria the FTA looks at. There's a lot of projects that you would think would be no-brainers in certain communities as far as meeting federal criteria that don't. And Phoenix even struggled at some point on getting their numbers together for the South Central extension that's occurring today. And you think of the corridor and the opportunities and the ridership in that corridor, you'd think, well, that's a no-brainer, but it's not. These are very stringent federal criteria, and so that's why we want to be smart and strategic about where we're making those investments.
Thank you. Great presentation. I think it is fairly straightforward as far as this budget year goes and what the recommendations were, but I join in the chorus here saying I think it's important that we be well positioned for Prop 500. City of Phoenix is going to be, they're going to be have shovel ready projects. They've, as you know, they got a whole set, yeah, that's contingent on it. So we will be at the back of the line unless we're prepared, you know, with similarly well prepared projects. And I still, to join with Mr. Luna, it'd be great to find a way to extend bus routes before 20 years from now with all the growth that we have. And I know I'm preaching to the choir, Jody. You want it more than anyone in the city, I know. But maybe we include that in our conversation, our planning conversation that's coming up. Any options that you might have for us to do that?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Any other questions for Jody, Council? All right, thank you very much. The next item on our agenda for this meeting is to hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Hearing none, the next item is schedule of future meetings and general information. Mr. Brady.
Yes, Mayor and Council. Just recall that we will have a study session this Thursday beginning at 7:30 a.m. We'll continue with our budget discussions with our public safety departments. Also, this Wednesday, April 19th, is Bike to Work Day. So we invite everyone to come out and enjoy a pancake breakfast and smoothie sales, and they'll all benefit Keller Elementary. There'll be an Earth Expo in the parking lot on the north side of Municipal Plaza. And then also a reminder, this Saturday, April 22nd, from noon to 4 p.m., we'll have a Celebrate Mesa event at the Holcomb Stadium. Admission is free. There'll be music, food, and activities for the kids. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you very much. If there's nothing else, is there a motion to adjourn? Thank you very much. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. We're adjourned.